Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
Hi there, I'm David Thornton. Welcome to this week's episode of Friends with Money. Superannuation isn't one size fits all. The market is full of products that suit different ages, risk appetites, and values. But it isn't enough to have products that meet people's demands. Super funds need to be able to communicate what's on the table so that Aussies can make an informed decision. Here to take us through what people want and how funds need to communicate the appropriate products on offer is Chantelle Walker, Active Super's Chief Digital and Marketing Officer. Well, thanks for joining us today on Friends with Money podcast, Chantelle.
Great. Thanks for having me, David. Looking forward to a good chat.
So, Chantelle, what do consumers of different demographics value in a super fund?
Look, it's a really interesting question. And I guess demographics is basically age-based in this thing. And I guess for me, you need to look at beyond just age, because typically I think people assume that everyone doesn't care about their super until they hit that sort of 55, 60 mark, at which point you go, oh, let me see, do I have super? How much do I have? Have I got enough? Have I got that elusive $1 million that sort of seems to fly around? Which point, in some cases, it's kind of a little bit too late. What you find, though, is if you overlay segmentation, proper segmentation, sort of marketing segmentation in terms of truly understanding your members or consumers, that actually a lot of the younger generation do care about it. They do understand. They are educated on it. And they take greater interest than I think a lot of older people would assume, because they think that people don't care about their super until they sort of get to 55, 60. And I think that's one of the myths that need to be busted within the super industry, is that there are a lot of people who do care about it, who do know about it. But that being said, it is fair to say that most people are probably pretty disengaged with their super funds, because in Australia, it is kind of like sometimes seen as a forced tax.
So how do the demographics differ? So you mentioned age as the primary demographic we're talking about here. How do the different age brackets differ in terms of what they're looking for in a super fund?
From what I could say, it really does come down to people's values. So, you know, ESG is a classic one, right? I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of greenwashing that goes in the ESG space, but I think a lot of people do care about ESG, particularly these sort of under 40-year-old, group. They understand the concept that, you know, the world, there's issues with climate change, and the concept of we've got to do stuff, whether that's gender equality, whether that's climate, et cetera. So they want to make sure that where their money is being invested is aligned to their values. You know, so that needs to be overlaid with age in terms of what people are looking for. They want to make sure that where their money, their hard-earned money is going, it's in a place that is invested how they perceive it the right thing to be, with the right values.
Are those values being communicated enough by the industry in your view? I mean, just in my opinion, ESG is a terrible acronym. And if I was the 20-year-old David, if he heard the acronym ESG, there is no way he would tune in.
Oh, look, I had no idea what ESG was until I joined this industry a year ago. So, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone really knows. I think it is a terrible acronym. I agree with you. That's why we don't, you know, I use it now. I've kind of got the lingo, I guess, being part of the industry. But, you know, responsible investing is a better way to put it, I guess. But it's beyond just climate. You know, I think the thing with, you know, if you go back to the E and the S and the G, there's ethical, there's sustainable, and there's governance. And actually, out of all of those three, the G for me is the most important, because it's often the governance that controls the E and the S. And it is things like pay, it's gender, it's slave labor, it's all those kind of things that are often driven out of the governance aspect as opposed to the E and the S. So it's about responsibility, and it's about understanding, you know, where money's being invested, how is it being invested? If managers investing on your behalf, how are they investing it? And what are the implications of the investments?
So as as people move through the age brackets, as you mentioned, the priorities change. And I suppose my super life cycle style products have solved some of that problem. But when you're talking about something like ESG, that's quite separate and aside to a life cycle product, is it not?
It is separate and aside, yes. And that comes down to obviously brand, a lot of brand in terms of super funds. So, you know, it could come down to brand, or it could come down to if you get out of the lifestyle products and you do choice. So, you know, a lot of choice products, you know, you can choose more ones. Some funds have it where there's ESG focused ones, other ones, it's just, you know, like an active super. It's just the way we do it. You know, we make sure that everything is invested with a responsible lens over it. So it, you don't need to choose a specific sustainable fund, for example. You know, I think that is one of the benefits of being with a fund like Active Super, where it is part of our DNA. Now, that's not just that not all funds, it's part of their DNA. So I think, you know, it's really important to understand the values and the ethos of your super fund as if you care about that. Now, not everyone cares about it. You know, just if people have different needs. But you're right, the My Super product does take care of the age with the concept, but it's also flawed in my opinion, in a sense that it assumes that everyone as they get older want less risk, and not everyone wants less risk. Some people actually understand the concept of risk and return, and that, you know, higher risk is potentially as higher returns come from having higher risk. And they're prepared to wear that.
That's a great segue to my next question. Where has the industry as a whole fallen short in terms of communicating to consumers the different products and options that are available?
Oh, goodness, that is a really big question, and I could talk for hours on it. We've only got a few minutes.
Give it a
shot. I guess if I go to the nub of it, it's actually not recognizing the fact that you're dealing with humans and you're dealing with consumers who do have a choice. You know, the super industry has been quite lazy in terms of its marketing because it hasn't had to market. It hasn't had to do your classical acquisition, retention, win back, segmentation, marketing. It hasn't had to build brands. You know, you'd arrive at a job, they'd say, do you want a super? Yes, sure. You fill in the form, off it goes. There hasn't been the need for you to stop and think, oh, what super do I want? Who am I aligned to? Whereas actually with all the legislation coming into play now, particularly stapling, it is much more imperative that you understand who your super fund is. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Are you even aware of it? You know, so I think good old fashioned marketing is becoming to play. So the biggest fault I would see within the industry is that they haven't dealt with consumers like consumers. It's been a one size fits all. And the government has mandated a lot of that. It's, you know, a one size fits all. And we all know that one size does not fit all, even in super.
So how does the industry cut through the noise and really target its message to older age groups, younger age groups, etc.?
You got to start with data. You got to start with good old-fashioned surveys, data, understanding who's your target audience, who, you know, values your product, who doesn't, who values your ethos, who values your style of investing, your fees, your performance. Put that all together, and you know, you develop 5P marketing strategy: price, product, place, promotion. I guess it's not rocket science, but it's not done in the super industry from what I could see today. People are starting to do it because obviously with stapling and choice becoming more paramount, you only have to turn on the television, and then I think every ad break has a super ad these days. You know, so especially the big guys are really trying to ram home the concept of brand and what their brand stand for.
So you can have, you know, the world's best marketing strategy.
Yep.
But at a certain point, especially when you're talking about younger members, at a certain point, they have to make a conscious decision to engage with their super. And, you know, there's a sea of products out there. So how do you recommend people go about methodically engaging with super? Where do they start and how do they move through the process?
I think it's less about what I recommend, and I think it's more about understanding human behavior. So there's a thing called Google, might have heard about it. You know? And the obvious place people always go to is Google. You'll type in what is the best super fund, or you know, what is a super fund that's aligned to X, or what's a super fund that doesn't invest in Y, depending on what your needs are, or what's the best super fund for a 30-year-old. That's just typical human behavior. And Google search, you know, will just show you as you start to type, those kind of things will pop up. So things like the ratings, you know, charts, the ATO website, et cetera, where they rank things is really important. You know, people want to know, what are the fees? What are the performance? They compare it. And then they'll see, oh, I recognize that brand, or I don't recognize that brand. So, and then if they've seen something on social, or they've seen, had asked a friend, oh, have you heard of this super, or which super are you with? They'll go look at reviews. They'll see what service levels are. You know, if you really do your homework, you can find out everything on the internet. So, you know, it's really important that super funds who do marketing understand that those tables do matter, that, you know, you can poo-poo some of the rankings and say, oh, you know, CanStar this, or, you know, the ATO that, but actually it's human behavior to go and look at, where do I sit? And often it's also about affirmation that you've made the right decision. You know, it's human psychology. You like to feel good about the decisions you've made. So even if you're not thinking of changing, you still go and look because you want to check that you've made the right decision.
Hear that? It's the winds of change. People are realizing that to do good for the world tomorrow, we must make good decisions today. And at Active Super, good decisions are in our DNA. For over a decade, we've been actively seeking out investments that have a positive impact on your retirement savings, the environment, and society. Active Super, your trusted super fund for the greater good. Head to activesuper.com.au today. Issued by LGSS Pty Limited as trustee for local government super known as Active Super. Read the PDS at activesuper.com.au before making a decision on this product.
Given what you said before about the emphasis on sustainable products and ESG products and the fact that a lot of people now prioritize those features, do you think the industry is putting too much emphasis on performance as the be all and end all, and it needs to balance it out with you know, what the fund's mandate is?
I don't, because at the end of the day, it is about money. And, you know, fees and performance is the number one thing that people want. However, it needs to be, I believe, done in a way that it's an and. So I don't think it's an either or. I think it's an and. So, you know, what we say at Active Super is it's performance and impact, not all. I think there used to be a perception that, you know, if you went for a responsible fund with ESG, that you wouldn't get performance. And, you know, that probably was true maybe 10, 15 years ago. But today it's not true. Today, actually, if you look at it, some of the best performing funds are the ones that have a really high responsible investing style. So that myth is also sort of blown out of the window.
So Chantel, what was behind Active Super's rebrand in 2021 after 24 years of local government?
The primary driver was, in fact, of growth. You know, we really are striving to grow. And the reality was that the name local government, by the nature of the words, was a hindrance. You know, fantastic legacy to come from being the default fund for local governments, which are the bedrock of New South Wales and all of our local communities. However, challenges on two fronts is that when people left local government, you know, say they changed jobs, they assumed that they couldn't stay with local government because they no longer work for the local government, which is not true because we've been a public fund for decades. So, you know, but people didn't know that. So that was probably a fault of, you know, not communicating that. But equally on the other side, you know, it didn't attract new people because they also assumed that you had to work for local government to be a part of the fund, which again wasn't true, but that story wasn't told. And, you know, it's a natural human psychology, again, back to brand affiliation. You like to be associated with your tribe. If your tribe is not the local government tribe, then you're not going to go to that tribe. It's the same as Qantas Super, Telstra Super, all of, you know, supers that have the name of the company naturally attract the tribe of that company. And yes, there'll be a few outliers, you know, people who potentially have stayed with it or may come in if it's a public offer, but it'll be few and far between. So the primary driver was growth. We wanted to look at a name that really at its heart was part of what our DNA is, you know, and I have a word that was a verb and a short verb that was, you know, memorable. So the word active, it's really hard to find a new name, as I'm sure you know. It's got to be available, you know, as a URL. It's got to be, you know, legally available. but I really wanted it to be a brand that was built from the inside out. And, you know, we have an active style management of our investments. So that worked with us. We're active in the local community. But most important, we wanted our members to be active in their super, because it's your most people's life savings and it is their retirement. So it's really important that we try to explain to members in a simple way, going, it's active, get active, we're active, we're active on your behalf, but you need to also get active.
Has that increased scale also broadened the
funds mandate? No, it's the same mandate we've always had. So the mandate hasn't changed, just the storytelling has changed. I mean, we've won the Infinity Award now 7 years in a row for being, you know, the most sustainable fund, RIA, we always get, you know, nominated. So mandate is the same. We just haven't told that story well enough.
Stepping back to the industry level now, obviously it's going through a lot of consolidation at the moment as small funds get gobbled up by larger funds. First, why is this happening? And second, what benefits, if any, does this offer consumers?
I think, you know, if you look through it, it's not dissimilar to what happened in the banking industry. A few decades ago, I haven't lived in Australia long enough to know when that all started. But, you know, there's the big four banks, which accommodate about 80% of the market share. And then there's 20%, you know, a lot of other big banks within there globally, but smaller banks within Australia. So, you know, it's very similar to that, what's happening in the super industry. And there's a lot of articles that you read that says we'll have, you know, the top four funds sooner. Some people say there'll be no little ones. I don't agree with that. I think there's always a place for, like in banking, you know, for smaller funds that do differentiate themselves on terms of values and ethos, whether that's investment or service or, you know, brand, et cetera. So I think there is benefit in having choice. There's benefit in having choice, not just the big four guys or girls, in having some smaller funds that are nimble, that can do things differently, that are potentially more aligned to the ethos of a smaller group of people who feel like that is their tribe. People like to find their tribe, and not everyone wants to be part of a big, big behemoth fund.
You mentioned before the importance of performance and fees as two key things people look for. Do smaller funds, will they be able to compete with the economies of scale?
It's tricky, you're absolutely right. I mean, you just have to look at the numbers. You know, super rating measures the cost per member. And yes, it is more expensive as a smaller fund, there's no doubt. However, you know, again, if you look at the service metrics are way better. You know, for example, I know we answer our phone calls within 20 seconds. I know some larger funds, you know, you'll be on hold for 15, 20 minutes. Now, you might not value that, but if you value service and you value having people in your local community, which comes at a cost, then, you know, you're prepared to pay a slight premium for that service if that's important to you. If you're just chasing the lowest fees, then, you know, maybe a smaller fund is not for you. Again, it comes down to choice and what's important to you as a consumer, as a member.
How important is the digital experience when you talk
about it? Honestly, I'm going to get on my soapbox now, but it is hugely important. And I think this is something that the super industry is just realizing. You know, I'm new to this industry. I've only worked in super for the last year. And prior to this, worked at a lot of big global and Australian iconic brands who are absolutely amazing at digital experience because they understand that that's where consumers live. Consumers live on their phones. Even 60, 70-year-olds live on their phones. It's not just 20-somethings. So it's really important we get the digital experience right, that we understand that, you know, people want to do things 24/7. You know, it's fascinating to me that if you look at, there's a 50% of funds, super funds in Australia don't have an app. Now, I just find that astonishing. You know, and I think the other thing for me is it's important to understand that human perceptions of what makes a good digital experience is not coming from the super world or even the banking world. It's coming from the likes of Uber and Netflix, who understand you, who know your next move, who make it so easy for you, you don't even have to think. Apple, I mean, just connecting up a new Apple phone to your new Apple TV is just the most beautiful journey because it's just so easy. So that's what's driving consumers' perception of what is a good digital experience, not necessarily what's in the super space. And if you understand that, then you can say, right, how do we make it easy? How do we make sure it's segmented? How do we make sure we've got the right, app, the right tools, the right interface, the right navigation that actually is simple and easy for members to get what they need to do, when they need to do it, how they want to do it, in the channel they want to do it, when they want to do it.
In the finance industry, when you're talking about digital experiences, there seems to be a perception that when you're talking about a digital experience for a younger cohort, it has to be almost gamified. Do you think the super industry risks falling victims to that, where, you know, people are on their super apps and they're rebalancing every other week when they perhaps shouldn't be?
My experience is that if you look back to segmentation, there's actually, it's a certain segment, regardless of age, that's gamified. Some of the biggest gamification, whether that's at Qantas, you know, when I worked at Qantas QFF, whether that's in banking, are actually in the 40-year-olds. So I think it's a myth that it's the youth, another myth busted. But I think it's a certain type of headspace that likes gamification. And, you know, whether that's on your Peloton app, whether that's in your QFF points, or whether that's in the super, if you have got the mindset of being a gamer, let's call it that, you'll gamify everything in your life.
Chantel, thanks so much for joining us on Friends with Money. Great chat.
Thank you so much.
That was Chantel Walker, Active Super's Chief Digital and Marketing Officer. Be sure to sign up to Friends with Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au.